Presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, coming up in just a couple of minutes, I have got some thoughts to share. And I think this may start a bit of a debate, which is, I guess, probably, you know, admittedly, part of the reason why we're doing this. And I don't remember what started this around here, but I came up with my ranking of what I believe are the toughest games for Georgia this upcoming season. And you can tell me how I get this wrong coming up in just a couple of minutes. Before we get to that, though, there was something that I saw on the internet last week, and I thought, boy, this is too interesting not to bring up at some point on Dog Nation Daily. It involves the Georgia offense, how it compares to some of the other offenses around college football, in a key particular stat. I think if you really want to boil this down, I think you can really see the specific area in which I'd like to see more from Georgia in 2019. And if Georgia can provide more in this one key specific area, not to oversimplify things, but I think this kind of speaks for itself. This one particular area, if Georgia can find just a little bit more of this one thing, it could lead to a national championship this season. I don't think that's too big of a stretch to say that. It does center around Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm. Fromm, who has had quite a career already at Georgia, stepping in as a surprise starter in the 2017 season after Jacob Eason's injury. He played admirably on the road at Notre Dame, became the anchor for this team as went to the college football playoff at the end of the 2017 season. And really, in 2018, he took his game from a statistical standpoint to an even additional level. He improved even more in his second season as starter in 2018. And now there is that need, both for Fromm individually, so he can one day make big-time money in the NFL, and Georgia collectively, so he can have the kind of quarterback that can lead it to a national championship. Now in 2019, there's that need and that hope and desire for Fromm to now take another big step forward. And we've talked about this on Dog Nation Daily a lot, even over the course of this offseason, even catching up with Trent Dilfer at one point in time, the head coach, so to speak, of the Elite 11 quarterback camp. And I asked Dilfer directly, what does Fromm need to do? How does he need to improve here this upcoming season to take that next step with his career? And when we talked about that back in, early February it was, Trent Dilfer had a very, very specific thing in mind for Jake Fromm. Here is what he said then.
I think he needs to be a little more athletic at the position. He needs to improve in the pocket. He needs to improve his movement patterns. He's got the arm, he's got the brain, he's got the toughness, he's got the leadership. He needs to step it up a little bit athletically, and at that age you can still improve athletically. So we'll see what this next year has for him, but for me, my emphasis if I was coaching him would be show a little more dynamic qualities as an athlete.
I think what Dilfer says there is really interesting, and I think that he certainly is an expert at the quarterback position. He knows what he's talking about. I think the problem, though, with what Dilfer says there, it can be a little bit difficult for us to know. So Dilfer says, I'm looking to see this movement pattern in the backfield when you get the ball in your hand. And that's something that a guy like Dilfer is going to pick up and recognize right away. For many of us, though, when we look in on Jake Fromm, we're not necessarily going to see exactly what Dilfer sees when he looks in on that, or what other quarterback experts might see when they look in on Fromm. For us, we almost need to distill it down to something a little bit more simple to really get an idea of just how much Jake Fromm is improving as a third-year quarterback in 2019. That's where a different piece of analysis becomes helpful, I believe, and a different piece of analysis becomes something that's particularly interesting to think about. There's a guy named David Hale, who's a longtime college football writer. I'm not sure who he's working for now, but he's been covering college football for quite some time, and he tweeted out the other day, and I saw this on Twitter, he tweeted out teams in college football that were the most impressive in 2018 in terms of passes of 20 or more yards down the field. Now, Georgia's not on the list of the top of these teams, but I do want to show you the list from David Hale, the college football writer, as far as who does it the most. Oklahoma State, you're probably not surprised, Big 12 offense, 3.23 throws of 20 or more yards down the field per game in 2018. Once again, West Virginia, another Big 12-style offense, NFL-capable quarterback. West Virginia was at 2.83 throws of 20 or more yards per 20 or more yards down the field per game. Then you get to Oklahoma, no surprise there. Then you see Alabama right in the middle of that list if you're watching on video at 2.67 throws of 20 or more yards down the field per game. keep Alabama in mind here, because Alabama is the SEC team that's on this list. It's a lot of Big 12 type teams or a Pac-12 team in Stanford. And then just below that, at 2.67 throws of 20 or more yards down the field, is the Alabama Crimson Tide. Well, a Georgia fan came back on Twitter to David Hale and say, hey, it was really interesting to see that list of all those teams that had the most 20 or more yards throws per game last season. But where does Georgia rank on this list? Where would a Florida rank on this list with its quarterback Felipe Franks? And David Hale obliged on Twitter and gave the answer for that. That Fromm last season was 14 of 44 for 575 yards with 6 touchdowns and a pick and 182 passer rating on those throws of 20 or more yards down the field. By comparison, Felipe Franks was 20 of 55 for 661 yards, also 6 touchdowns a pick, and a 169.7 passer rating. But the interesting number, the only thing from that on Jake Fromm I want you to think about, is the number 14. Georgia had 14 passes of 20 or more yards down the field in 2018, which puts you at about 1 per game. Alabama was at about 2.67. Let's, for the simplicity of math, round that up to 3, and for the simplicity of math, say Georgia was at 1. Alabama had 3 throws of 20 or more yards per game last season thereabouts. Georgia had about 1. So if you really want to get to what I believe could be the essence of the improvement that the Georgia offense needs to show this upcoming season, it's a very simple question. Can Georgia, Jake Fromm in particular, he is the quarterback on this year's team. After all, this team belongs to him now, undisputedly. Can Georgia find 2 more big throws per game? Big throws being defined as throws of 20 or more yards down the field. Can Georgia find 2 more of those per game? If they can find 2 more of those per game this season, to get somewhere near where Alabama was at about, what, just under 3 per game last year, if Georgia can take that step towards Alabama this season, I think that could dynamically change the Georgia offense. And the good news is, when you listen to Jake Fromm talk about these kinds of things, Fromm himself seems really ready to do this. Fromm, even going into the Alabama game last December against a really good Crimson Tide defense, was ready to go for home run throws in that game. Because if you listen to Fromm tell it, not only is he confident in his ability to throw it, but the guys that he has lining up as wide receivers, he's confident in their ability to step up and catch those balls as well. So if you're looking to see Georgia take that next step, the eagerness of Jake Fromm to do just that, I think, gives you some hope. Here's what Fromm said about that back in December.
I feel very comfortable with our guys anytime they're manned up on anybody. From all the work we do throughout the summer, throughout fall camps, throughout the season, our guys are making plays right now. They're doing an awesome job, you know, creating separation versus man coverage, whether it's zone, whether it's man. You know, our guys are doing a great job.
Now, what's interesting about what Fromm said then is he's talking about some guys that he won't have in 2019. He's talking partially about Mecole Hardman there. He's talking partially about Riley Ridley there. Those guys are on their way to the NFL. But what's maybe better news, though, for Georgia is that the crop of wide receivers that Fromm's expecting to throw to this season may actually be more well-equipped for those kinds of big throws, those 20 or more yard throws. You may have the perfect complement of wide receivers this season to do that. At least that's what you hope these guys grow into. I'm talking about a guy like Demetrius Robertson, who was on the Georgia roster last year, and for whatever reason, just not ready to blossom in that role. This was a guy who was, let's not forget, a freshman All-American going back to his time at Cal in 2016. Maybe the year spent learning was one that Robertson's going to benefit from this season. Maybe Robertson, who uses that dynamic speed, he may be among the fastest players in the Georgia roster. Maybe he uses that to create the kind of separation that can lead to some of these big-time throws. Maybe it's a guy like a freshman, Dominic Blaylock, who, if you look at his high school film in the Atlanta area, this is a guy that became a big-time fan favorite with a lot of Georgia fans because of how exciting he was as a high school player. I think Blaylock has a chance to contribute to some of this. And admittedly, because it's been a fixation of mine for quite some time, I do think, assuming all works out well in the classroom, and I have no reason to believe that it won't, I do believe that George Pickens plays a big role in all of this, too. And I want to be careful how I say this because I don't want to overhype what Pickens might be able to do in his first year. That would be unfair for me to put that kind of level of expectation on him and set up a scenario where Pickens is, you know, being thought by fans to need to do too much in his first year in the Georgia roster. But Benjamin Wolk, who's covered this guy from the Auburn side of things for a while, the Auburn recruiting reporter who joined us a couple of weeks ago, said that he's the best high school player that he's seen in his years of covering this industry and covering that kind of stuff. It's the kind of dynamic athlete that he is. And if you're looking to see Georgia find some of those big-time throws that the Jerry Judys of the world were hauling in, Jalen Waddle, who made a big impact in that role as a freshman for Alabama in 2018,
If you're looking to see some of that from George in 2019, then honesty does compel me to admit that I think that George Pickens may be the most likely, the best example of who might be able to do that for Georgia this season. And not only is this a case where Pickens can give Georgia what it needs, but if you listen to George Pickens talk, maybe this is a Georgia offense that can also give him what he wants, which are some individual accolades. He'd like to be an award winner. He'd like to become a one-day future NFL star. And he thinks the Georgia offense is absolutely the offense that can be a springboard to him for all of that. And if you're a Georgia fan, that's certainly good news, too. Here's George Pickens.
Georgia was a great school for me to go to, I feel, in my personal opinion, because they have everything that you kind of want. I mean, who doesn't want to win a ring? Who doesn't want to be up for freshman All-American? Who doesn't want to win a Biletnikoff? Who doesn't want to play with great players? So that's why I feel like Georgia was always good for me.
Who doesn't want to play with great players? Who doesn't want to win the Biletnikoff? Who doesn't want to be a freshman All-American? Who doesn't want to win the ring? I do believe that ring that Georgia's been looking for, I think the missing piece in all of that equation may be some more of the big-time throws that guys like George Pickens hope to haul in their college career. I think that Jake Fromm's the quarterback to throw them. I think that Pickens and others are the receivers to catch them. And that offense taking that step forward in 2019 could be the thing that leads Georgia to that land that it's been wanting to go to, that land of championships. It could indeed be a lot of fun. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Hopefully you're like me and feel like the voice is sounding a little better today compared to where it was at the end of last week. So hopefully we're on to a better start to this week, at least as far as all that goes. Nonetheless, we're glad to have you with us live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, pretty much wherever you find podcasts, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player, the worldfamousdognation.com. We're just really glad you found us today. We've got Chip Towers coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, I want to go around the doghouse here today, presented by our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia. And I don't remember what got us off on this conversation, but on our video comments for the last couple of days, last couple of weeks maybe even, we've been having a little bit of debate that kind of led me to want to lay it out on kind of black and white stark terms about what I believe are Georgia's toughest games for this upcoming season. And I've got my opinions based on very specific criteria, and I honestly want to hear from you in terms of how you feel about it. You can either reach out to me on Twitter, at Dog Nation Daily, or you can hit me up on the comment section here live on video, whether it be the Facebook page, the YouTube feed, the Twitter feed. Love to have you react to this as well as we go around the doghouse with some thoughts today on exactly what Georgia might be facing in 2019. And I guess when I look ahead and personally think about this 2019 schedule, I guess there is one thing that hangs in my mind over all of this discussion based on what we've seen from Georgia in 2018, what we've seen from Georgia in 2017. Over the last couple of seasons, the one criticism that Georgia to this point has not yet been able to erase is how it performs in hostile road environments. In hostile road environments, we've seen Georgia now 2 years in a row be less than its best. So when I think about demons to exercise in this upcoming season, we just talked a lot about, hey, what's it going to take to get Georgia into that true national championship conversation? Well, you can lay out some specific on-field stuff, but some kind of intangible off-the-field stuff that Georgia's going to think about and wrestle with. It's how do you handle that hostile road environment? So when you see my top five games, I think you're going to see those hostile road environments play a big role in all of this. In fact, if you're watching on video, let me show you the full screen. If you're listening, I'll obviously say this to you, whether it's radio or podcast. Here is my ranking of top five toughest games this season. Number one on my list, I have the road trip to Auburn on November 16th. This is, for me, a reminder of what happened the last time George was here, back in 2017. Hostile crowd, a fast start from Auburn. Georgia had a hard time reacting to that. You want to see better from Georgia in that here in 2019. And many of you are going to say, well, B.A., Auburn's not going to be quite that good. They're not going to be a top 10 team this year. On paper, that's certainly probably the case. This is probably still a top 25 team, though. And a top 25 team playing behind a hostile crowd could be dangerous for Georgia that day. Dangerous enough that I have it ranked number one on my list of Georgia's most toughest games here for 2019. Below that, I have Texas A&M at number two. I do believe that Texas A&M, by the time they come to Athens on November 23rd, has a chance to be a very highly ranked team, and I think that's the kind of game for Georgia that's going to feel like as big a home atmosphere for an SEC game as Georgia's felt in quite some time. I think this could be a pretty big deal for Georgia. I've got that at number two. Surprisingly, for maybe some of you, at number three, I have at Tennessee on October 5th. I don't believe that Tennessee is among the toughest opponents that Georgia faces this season. I don't think it's going to have one of the better records. I don't even believe that Tennessee is going to be a top 25 team. But once again, though, this is another example of being in a hostile road environment. I think Neyland Stadium will be that on October 5th when Georgia has to go there. It's the kind of thing that I think that Georgia gets a chance to prove itself. Now, obviously, in 2017, being at Neyland was no big deal. Georgia won 41-0. I think the Tennessee roster under Jeremy Pruitt has improved somewhat since then, and my expectation is it'll at least be enough of a road test that we'll find out a pretty good bit about Georgia that day. Then to round out my top five pretty quickly, I've got Florida at four. That's obviously a game that takes place in Jacksonville on November 2nd. And here's my feeling on the Gators. I think that every year you see preseason top 10 teams, one of those teams by the end of the year finishes unranked. I think there's a chance that Florida is in the conversation to be that team in 2019. I have heard a lot of hype for the Gators over the course of this offseason. And to me, it all rings in my ears as too much too soon. Now, many of you will say, well, B.A., you're just the chief Gator hater. That's just a red and black colored glasses. Be that as it may, we'll find out ourselves this upcoming season. But I feel like the conversation about Florida is getting well out in front of the actual likelihood of expectations here this season. So for me, Florida is no more than the fourth toughest game that Georgia will face this season. And then for me, number five, I've got Notre Dame on September 21st. Based on record of opponent, or should say ranking of opponent, Notre Dame will probably be the highest ranked team that Georgia plays all season, because Notre Dame is going to probably have a very high preseason ranking. But Notre Dame cannot keep pace with Georgia in Sanford Stadium. They just can't. I think that being distracted by the playoff hurt Georgia in the Sugar Bowl last year, but that's the kind of thing that's likely to, I think, work in Georgia's favor in September. I think Georgia will be plenty motivated to show the committee that it got it wrong in 2018. And I think the Fighting Irish could be on the receiving end of a big-time whipping that day in Athens. So that's my top five. I'd love to have you weigh in with yours or where I'm wrong in terms of the toughest games that Georgia faces this season. And we'll certainly have some fun with that in the comment section a little bit later on. By the way, it's Around the Doghouse presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. They can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. They're a national company, but they also have a local branch right here in Georgia, which means you get the local service, but also the power and the prestige of a national company. You get it both with Pella Window and Door. And right now, you can also get a great offer. 50% off, I should say 40% off, 40% off qualifying installations or 0% APR for 48 months. That's valid through March 28th. So you got to go right now to take advantage of 40% off on those qualifying installations or the 0% APR. Simply schedule your in-home consultation one of two ways. Find them online at PellaSoutheast.us. That website, once again, PellaSoutheast.us. Or give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom at 404-445-2979. That's 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. It's great to have you on Dog Nation Daily here today. Hope you will stick with us later on. The legendary former coach of the Georgia Bulldogs, Vince Dooley, has spoken out in a pretty interesting way on what was a hot topic for Georgia last week. We'll get to that coming up in a moment. For now, though, let's talk to our buddy Chip Towers.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
It's great to have Chip Towers here on Dog Nation Daily, especially when there's been so much going on around the Georgia program over the last few days. And, of course, Chip's a great voice to catch up with on a lot of that kind of stuff. So, Chip, we appreciate you spending some time with us here this morning. Hope you're doing well. Hope you had a great weekend. It's really beautiful weather around the state of Georgia yesterday. Hope you get a chance to enjoy that. And thanks for being with us here today.
It's great to have you back, B.A., and it's great to see a little sunshine these past couple of days. I hope it lasts and carries on, but the forecast is not real encouraging last time I looked at it.
Well, yeah, certainly around here things have a way of changing pretty fast. Let's talk about what was a big story last week. The change to the Auburn schedule, based on what you wrote at DogNation.com, it sounds like your opinion is very closely in line with mine. It seems hard to understand what Georgia is getting out of this or what it thinks it's getting out of this. Now, for some fans, it's not a big deal to them whether the game's played in November or October, but there is a natural curiosity on my part to find out what was behind this from the Georgia side. Chip, I've obviously gone round and round about the fact that I think it's a bad deal for Georgia, but I am genuinely curious to figure out what Georgia was hoping to gain by doing this. What is Georgia's side of the story on really acquiescing and giving Auburn exactly what it wanted?
Well, you know, at this point, all we can do is believe as the truth, you know, what we're being told by Greg McGarrity and Jerry Moorhead, who are very adamant about saying, you know, in the immediate aftermath of this, that this is what Kirby wanted, and that he was either accepting or like this. Now, we have not had an opportunity to really fully vet that with Kirby Smart, and I'm eager to get a chance to do that. We haven't had an opportunity really to talk to Kirby, you know, in a question and answer format since the Sugar Bowl. But they say in no uncertain terms that he was for this. Anytime, and I do buy this part of it, you know, the general process of what's going on is the 2020 schedule is getting to be released. This is the regular reset time for the 2020 schedule. Obviously, Auburn has been outspoken about their need or want or desire to move off of that date so that they're not playing Georgia and Alabama, you know, back-to-back, not really back-to-back, but in back-to-back conference contests on the road. So, it's, you know, there's no question that that is Auburn's move, Auburn's impetus to have this game move. Now, you can't do anything. You can't move any of these sliding tiles without the agreement of both the conference and the other school. And this was vetted through the SEC with Georgia. Georgia, in turn, Greg McGarrity vets it with Kirby Smart, and they say, this is what it will look like. Are you okay with this? And we're told, thumbs up from Kirby Smart. I'm good with that. Now, you and I both, Brandon, I think, you know, I just assume things never change, right? I mean, I've always liked this, and I think one of the dangers of the whole thing, this Georgia-Auburn series has really gone well for Georgia in the past several years. So even though Georgia, you know, had to do that back-to-back thing in 12 and 13, you know, Georgia is owning the Auburn rivalry of late and certainly under Kirby Smart. So you don't, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? So, yeah. You know, I think it would have been fine staying like it is. Plus, you know, I like that. You know, to me, it's always been Florida, Auburn, Georgia Tech. Florida, Auburn, Georgia Tech. How Georgia ends against their three biggest rivals determines what kind of year they're going to have. That's not going to be the case. Now, I can see where Tennessee, which is how this is supposed to change, fits well into that spot, particularly, and I don't think this is talked about enough, Brandon, from the standpoint of you've got a stamp the East game, you know, right before the whoever's going to represent the East. Georgia and Tennessee are going to have something to be said about that late in the season. I get that, and that makes sense to me. But generally, you know, I think it was fine just like it was, but it looks like we're going to see a change in 2020.
Let me just do one quick follow-up on this because I think it's important to remind. It seems like it's been weirdly confusing for some people that while Tennessee may fit well at the end of the season, as you said, kind of a referendum on the SEC East, the one way in which it doesn't seem to be a good fit, based on Kirby Smart's previous statements on this, he didn't like those back-to-back road games near the end of the season playing at Georgia Tech, at Auburn in the same year. Tennessee's no alleviation for that because, as it currently stands, they're on the same home-and-away model where Georgia plays at Tennessee in the same years that it plays at Auburn. So, based on Kirby Smart's previous statements on this, this isn't the comfort that he was seeking.
Yeah, no, and you know, ultimately we don't know that. I mean, you know, based on the, you know, the logic and everything you look at, you think that that would continue the way it is, the rotation right now, then Tennessee would still be on, you know, be a represent an away game back-to-back there at the end with Georgia Tech. You know, we don't know that 100%. We'll see. You know, I'm told with a kind of wink-wink, you know, from McGarrity and those that, you know, hey, just wait till the schedule comes out and you'll understand how this is okay. So ultimately we got to see how it shakes out for everybody before we can be certain of it. You're right. I mean, if that ends up being the change, you're just, you know, you're just robbing Peter to pay Paul. It's really the same thing. It's just an Eastern game versus a Western game. And here's another thing. It's cold in Knoxville in late November. I mean, that's going to be a very cold game up there on the banks of the Tennessee River. Generally, Georgia has played that in September or early October at the latest, and it's always been, you know, the weather's basically been a non-factor. That could be a little bit of a factor
going forward.
Let me talk about Greg McGarrity for a moment. The athletic director, in the midst of all this, signs a one-year extension. The one-year part of this, to me, seems a little bit weird. It would seem, you know, one way or another, you'd either sign a longer extension or you'd announce some sort of, you know, change of plans, either him deciding to retire, George deciding to move on. The one-year extension seems a little weird. Chip, for the most part, I'm agnostic on McGarrity. I'm not nearly as anti-McGarrity as some of our audience is, nor am I probably as pro-McGarrity, maybe as some other, you know, factions of the donor base may be. I just kind of somewhere in the middle and all of that. There are times when I wish he was a little more fiery, the way that I think Alan Green was in this issue with the Auburn schedule change, or maybe an LSU athletic director like Joe Oliva, what he's been over the last couple of years. Those are guys who've really given full voice to speaking up for their program, and I think they've benefited from that. McGarrity chooses to do things a little differently. I don't always love that, but for the most part, I don't really have a strong feeling one way or another about Greg McGarrity. What do you think of McGarrity getting the one-year deal, and what do you think of the way that Georgia fans view him and the way that he ought to be viewed?
Well, you know, first off, I'll say, you know, again, we're left to trust, you know, what those in leadership are telling us. And, you know, again, McGarrity and Moorhead were both pretty emphatic that this was, quote unquote, you know, McGarrity's idea, the one-year extension. Now, the, you know, it's been described in other places, and I get it, as lukewarm and tepid. But, you know, I there's two things on McGarrity that make me believe it. One, when he first came in, which is now about 10 years ago, I had a one-on-one interview with him not too much after. It was in his first year. I can't remember when it was. And he intimated to me at that time that he said he couldn't see himself doing this more than 10 years. And if you know McGarrity on a personal level, you kind of get that. I mean, he's a guy that he's not real big on ego. You know, he doesn't really need this job to validate how he feels about himself. That's actually counterintuitive to a lot of people that lead these positions. You know, usually they're very ambitious and egotistical. He's really not that way. And, you know, you can understand, I think Brandon, I can anyway, that, you know, he's 64 years old, you know, 42 years in higher education, fully vested, you know, from a standpoint of benefits and all that kind of stuff. And, like, he can walk away and just go travel the world with his wife, Cheryl, anytime he wants to. So there's that. Then there's the other thing, the kind of the ongoing project, you know, that Georgia has, you know, right now. I think, you know, look, Kirby Smart was his hire. Georgia has been knocking on the door for a national championship. I think, you know, Greg McGarrity would like to be a part of that. 2019 is a huge year for Georgia. All of us who follow them closely know that and realize why that's the case. And I think, you know, Greg McGarrity does too, and he would love to, you know, see Georgia cross the finish line in that regard. This is a guy that's a Georgia alum. The other part of that is basketball. You know, he made the rather notable move of firing Mark Fox that a lot of, you know, coaches in the business anyway thought that was a little bit ruthless, and then replacing him with Tom Crean. He has pledged that Tom Crean is full support on getting basketball turned around, much in the way he was involved with getting basketball turned around at the University of Florida. So, you know, I think, you know, if Georgia were to win a national championship in football this year and maybe have a pretty good year in basketball next year, you might say Greg McGarrity says, you know, all right, that, you know, things are going pretty good. I can pass the baton to the next guy. I believe that general. I mean, I believe that's the truth. The other side of it is you know, Greg McGarrity's not a very exciting guy. He's big on protocol. He's not going to get out there and talk on his own, kind of the way Alan Green did, about this is what we're wanting. He won't tell you what Georgia really wants when it comes to their scheduling needs for the future and those kind of things. He plays all those things like you're supposed to behind closed doors, or if there's a facility thing about to come online like we're about to have with the football facility, he's not going to discuss it in detail until it's been fully vetted by the Board of Regents, which is what the protocol is. So he's a stickler for those kind of details. It's not very sexy, but it helps with higher up, with the SEC office, with the NCAA, and certainly with Georgia's board and their president.
Let me do a couple quick things before we let you go. First of all, since you and I last spoke on this show, Georgia has got a defensive coordinator, I guess, Dan Lanning in that role, co-defensive coordinator for Glenn Schumann. I think it's confusing how Georgia rolled this out. It's also somewhat inexplicable to me why they wouldn't want to put more of a spotlight on what I think is a good young and up-and-coming coach like Lanning. You know, I'm not so much into the media part of this of, hey, why not hold a press conference? But I guess, Chip, I do find myself wondering, why not at least announce it as opposed to having it to be, you know, almost like it was something you were trying to keep secret, you know, open records request to find out who the defensive coordinator was. It seems to me that Lanning is owed more than this from Georgia, and I think it would help him on the recruiting trail to be touted a bit more. Why do you think Georgia's choosing to go about this in such an unorthodox way?
Yeah, I don't have a strong theory on that, and I share your questions about it, Brandon, because I do think it's a little bit odd. I mean, look, you know, a coordinator on any staff is a notable position, and, you know, times have changed a little bit. I get the entire hire, and if you go back in Dog Nation, I wrote a story on Dan Lanning, you know, called, you know, From Elizabeth Street to Sanford Drive. This is a fascinating backstory of how Dan Lanning got into this position, and just talk about a guy who is, cashed his check on himself, you know, self-belief and pragmatism and focus and hustle. It's a terrific story, and not forgetting that Glenn Schumann is part of this equation, but I think it's pretty clear that Dan Lanning is coordinator and Glenn Schumann is co-coordinator. And, I also get to say, you know, and Kirby talked about this, I think, when he spoke with recruits down in Macon, that, you know, Kirby has a way he wants things run, and he's not going to go out and hire some big-name defensive coordinator from another program and say, okay, come in here and bring your system and run the defense for me. We've all watched Kirby close enough. That's not how he works, you know. He said when they huddle up on the sideline in big moments in defense, it's going to be Kirby Smart in the middle of it, and that's even with, you know, a grizzled veteran like he had, a well-respected Mel Tucker. That was still the case. Kirby's the man when it comes to defense. He just needs somebody to run his defense. But as to why, you know, he's handled it like he has, it's a mystery to me, and I don't know, and I'm looking forward. We'll get a chance to talk to him sooner or later, and when we do, you know, that's probably going to be a long press conference, a lot of questions, because there's a lot of questions that we need Kirby to answer eventually, and I'm sure he knows that and will in due time.
Let me do one quick thing before I let you go. Off the top of the program, I talked about a specific thing I'd like to see more from with the Georgia offense here this season, and those are those throws of 20 or more yards down the field. I won't get into all the stuff with you here, but I basically distilled it down to if George can find two more of those per game this season, I think that can make a big, big difference in the pursuit of a national championship here. I don't expect a huge overhaul from the Georgia offense, nor do I want there to be one, Chip. I still want this to be a football team that runs the ball. I want to use those big offensive linemen. But a couple extra deep throws per game, how reasonable is that to expect, you think?
I think that's very reasonable. In fact, I think that should be the expectation. I think it's what's going to happen. You know, between the changes, you know, certainly in James Coley coming, I think the or taking over the offense and just the general setup. I'm starting a series right now, which will start running today and all the way into the beginning of spring practice, you know, the pre-spring analysis. When you get in there and really get down in the weeds and start breaking down Georgia's roster, I mean, I think it's right for that kind of thing. I mean, Georgia's always going to bank on running the football first, and that is not going to be different in 2019. But one of the great things about being able to do that effectively is, you know, as a defense, you really better be, you know, prioritizing stopping that run. Otherwise, Georgia's going to gash you to death. And I think defense has done that to a large part. But between Jake Fromm being kind of unquestioned as the man, the makeup of Georgia's wide receiver core, which certainly Riley Ridley and Mecole Hardman losing them, that hurts you. But I don't know if this group is not going to improve overall, whether it be, you know, Dominique Blaylock, whether it be the new kid that signed in the late period, and then the guys they have coming back. I mean, I think there's some speed and a particular skill set to be able to get down the field. And I just think between Coley's attitude, the personnel, and Jake Fromm being the junior who's out there practicing these throws every day, I think we're going to see not just a little bit more. I think we may see a lot more of that in 2019.
Yeah, that should be really interesting, Chip. Thanks for your time. We'll look forward to reading those pre-spring previews there at DogNation.com. Never too early to start thinking about that. G-Day's actually not that far away, so that's a lot of fun to read and get ready for. And, Chip, we appreciate you writing it, and we'll look forward to speaking to you back here on Dog Nation Daily again very soon, too.
Looking forward to it, B.A. Have a great week, buddy.
You too.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, really interesting from Chip Towers there. A very optimistic assessment of the Georgia offense. I want to talk more about that in a moment because I think that there are a couple of misunderstandings maybe even about just how close Georgia might be able to be to having a big breakthrough with its passing offense. We'll talk about that in a moment. Before that, let me remind you about our friends at Kroger. They got a great offer going on right now. You can order all your favorite items from Kroger Ship and have them delivered to your door. Free shipping plus 15% off your first order when you use the code SHIP15. That's SHIP15. Use that code and you can get 15% off your first order. Simply go to ship.kroger.com to start shopping. That's ship, SHIP.kroger.com to start shopping, and make sure you use the promo code SHIP15 to get the 15% off. So a couple things. First of all, my whole belief about Georgia and the two additional passes of 20 or more yards down the field, that's almost all based on the comparison to Alabama, which was, according to David Hale, the College Football Writer, at 2.67 throws last season of 20 or more yards per game down the field. Georgia only about one of those per game last season. Georgia can find two of those per game. And I think the misunderstanding is that somehow Alabama just threw it a lot more than Georgia did and ran it a lot less than Georgia did, that it became this offense under Mike Locksley last season with Tua Tagovailoa quarterback that was wildly different from what Nick Saban's offense had been in the past. The truth is, if you look a little deeper at the statistics, it really kind of wasn't. It didn't really subtract anything to get those passing plays. It just simply added to its offense. I mean, if you go to CFBstats.com, Alabama, in terms of total rushing attempts, it actually ran the ball last year for total number of attempts more than Georgia did. Now, it also played in one additional game, so that's a factor in some of that. But total number of rushing attempts, it ran the ball a total number of times more than Georgia did. In terms of total passing attempts, the numbers were Alabama at 438, Georgia at 356. What is that, a difference of about, 80 or so? About four passes per game, passing attempts, I mean. Georgia might not have to throw the ball a ton more to find a couple more deep throws. Maybe just about four more attempts per game to get those two additional deep receptions, and the Georgia offense could take a big step forward with the Alabama offense did last season with Tua Tagovailoa quarterback. That could be a fun thing to pay attention to. I was looking at the comment section during my interview with Chip as well. There's a lot of reaction coming into my ranking of the toughest opponents for Georgia this season. We'll look forward to doing some of that on video later on as part of our R.S. Andrews Cooldown as we kind of get your thoughts on everything happening around UGA as a part of that. Before that, though, let's do our SEC through and get some SEC stories in. I saw where Florida lost a couple of commits over the last couple of days. Neither one of these guys are guys that I'm all that big on. Kevon Lee, I guess maybe the bigger overall name here, a four-star athlete for the class of 2020. They also lost another guy the other day too. I think what this goes to show you is that there's been a lot of grief about Georgia maybe being off to a quote-unquote slow start to its 2020 class, especially in comparison to LSU, which seems to have 10, 11 commitments already, a lot of four stars, a five star. But with Florida losing guys, Georgia's still sending out a bunch of offers. We are still in kind of a stage where the 2020 class is just now coming together, and I think there was a time, if you want to go back to the 2018 recruiting cycle for sure, where we spent most of the spring and summer on this show. I'm not very proud to say this, but we spent most of the spring and summer pretty panicked about the state of Georgia's recruiting class. The time it had dropped down to 60-something, or I think it even gotten down to the 70s at one point in time in terms of its ranking on the 24/7 sports composite. A lot has happened between then and now to lead us to believe that Georgia has no slow start to be worried about whatsoever. Maybe a couple losses to the Florida class, maybe another example of that. Auburn did pick up a commitment. It's the four-star wide receiver, J.J. Evans. This is not a major national-level prospect. It is a four-star wide receiver, though, as Auburn tries to rebrand its offense there as well. Remember, Tiger's still trying to figure out who their quarterback of the future is going to be. A lot of hope and belief about Bo Nix coming in as a freshman. We'll see on the recruiting trail in the months ahead for the class of 2020 or maybe the class of 2021 how much recruits are buying into the future of Auburn with Bo Nix, maybe even Gus Malzahn calling the plays, depending on how many big-time wide receivers choose to sign up for that program. Evans, with all due respect, is probably a big, big step down from where George, from where Auburn hoped to be with George Pickens. But nonetheless, we'll follow that and see where it goes. I saw where LSU is going to be without defensive tackle Rashard Lawrence for spring practice. He's going to have a surgery. That's going to keep him out. They've dealt with some of this kind of stuff in the past. A lot of their star players have missed spring practice over the last couple of years. And in some cases around college football, this ends up being a big deal. In some cases, not. When it comes to Lawrence, I gather that's probably not going to be that big of a deal. And I guess the overall takeaway for me is, even with, you know, guys like Devin White moving on the NFL and guys like Greedy Williams moving on to the NFL, I'm still expecting this LSU defense to be pretty good. I think that Grant Delpit could be among the best players in the league. I think that Lawrence is a pretty top-flight player in his own right. Keeping Brayden Fehoko in the fold there, the former Texas Tech transfer, this could still be a pretty good LSU defense this season. And another one of those teams, along with Texas A&M, that I think could be a little bit of a threat to Alabama in the SEC West here in 2019. And then one final point to get to and make here. I'm not the world's biggest NFL draft observer. I've told y'all that before. I not only do I not love the NFL draft, because of the way that a lot of the analysts talk about the draft, is about my least favorite event in all of sports. But I was looking in some of these mock drafts, and I was noticing that I guess you've got, what, the potential for three SEC offensive tackles maybe taking the first round? Juwan Taylor is a tackle, right? Greg Little, the Ole Miss guy, and probably Jonah Williams, at least three of those guys taking the first round. And I think you can start to look ahead and fast forward a bit to the 2020 draft as well, where that could really be Andrew Thomas in that conversation. And think about that, how that changes the calculus for Georgia moving forward. The same way that linebackers want to now follow in Roquan Smith's footsteps, and I think in the future you're going to see guys that want to follow in DeAndre Baker's footsteps, the winner of the Thorpe Award this past season. When it's Andrew Thomas next season, and that same conversation of the Greg Little and Juwan Taylor, I guess Taylor's a little bit banged up and hurt, but nonetheless, I think he's still going to be, you know, a first-round guy. Jonah Williams is going to be in that kind of discussion as well. When it's Andrew Thomas getting that kind of talk, when it's Andrew Thomas getting that kind of attention next season, think about how Sam Pittman's already dominated the offensive line recruiting wars of the last couple of years. How much easier does that job get once he can point to a real success story and say, I took Andrew Thomas, who, by the way, was not a five-star coming out of high school, was a four-star. But if he's on a top-10 pick next season, then there's a very good chance that he will be. That could be a lot of fun for Georgia's future recruiting efforts, and for a guy like Thomas, an accolade that he would most definitely be deserving of. Just kind of a fun look ahead to the future, what that might be like. Maybe a little foreshadowing to more NFL draft success for a big Georgia offensive tackle in the 2020 draft. You hate to see him leave as a junior, but if he goes, that would be certainly a pretty good boon to the offensive line recruitment for the University of Georgia. We'll make that your SEC through. All right. Here on Dog Nation Daily, I want to spend a moment kind of looking back at something I was talking to Chip Towers about before. And I know there's been this debate among some Georgia fans of why are other Georgia fans as bothered by the Auburn schedule change as we have been. I have been very outspoken about that. A lot of Georgia fans have agreed with me, but not everyone has. A lot of people have responded to me on Twitter, either at Dog Nation Daily or in our comment section here, to say, hey, listen, BA, if Kirby Smart's fine with this, I'm fine with it. Well, you know, what's the big deal? And I think the words of the legendary former Georgia coach Vince Dooley are a reminder of why this kind of is a little bit of a big deal. He was on a sports radio station in Mobile, Alabama, WNSP. He was on the program with the host there, and he was asked about this. And Dooley was pretty outspoken about his feelings on this and kind of where he thought Georgia went wrong on this. Let me show you the quote on the screen. And if you're listening, I'll obviously read it to you. This is Vince Dooley from WNSP in Mobile, Alabama. He says the change benefits Auburn. You can imagine some of the Georgia people are not happy with it, because you get into a routine of when the game is scheduled, no question. It's very good for Auburn, and Georgia has evidently gone along with it. And it's that last line from Dooley that's kind of the problem here of, hey, this is what Auburn wanted, and Georgia's just kind of going along with it, that calls leadership into question. And I listen, Dooley, within this, in the frame of the same interview, did talk about how, as athletic director, he worked to change the longstanding tradition of playing Florida, Auburn, Georgia Tech, and three consecutive games to end the season. So Dooley's no stranger to getting schedule changes done. But you don't like the idea of Auburn pushing for something, Georgia going along with it. Your hope is there'd be more leadership than that. And maybe when Kirby Smart speaks on this issue publicly, he'll be able to give some voice as to what he believes that Georgia's getting out of this. Because based on his previous statements about not wanting those two late November road games, this change doesn't seem to alleviate that at all. And I do think it leaves a lot of Georgia fans wondering, well, what did Georgia get out of all of this after all is said and done? All right, speaking of all being said and done, we're almost done here today on our program. Before we wrap up, I do want to remind you about a really good event coming up this Thursday with a great former Georgia Bulldog. That's Malcolm Mitchell. He's hosting a magical evening of literacy. It's this Thursday, February 28th, from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Foundry at Puritan Mill in Atlanta. You can join Malcolm Mitchell and learn more about his mission to inspire kids to read. The evening will begin with cocktails and a silent auction at 7 p.m. and, of course, dinner at 8 p.m. in addition to the fun of the live auction. Malcolm Mitchell is also going to talk about leadership and literacy. It's going to be a terrific evening, a diverse group of individuals who all share a philosophy and commitment to inspiring kids to read by placing books in their hand. Speaking of inspiring, there is nothing more inspiring than the way that Malcolm Mitchell has really become a great voice for literacy. And I tell you, I know a lot of young kids. I have young kids. The first book that he wrote was very well received and just a really cool, I think, role model that Mitchell is. Great career in football and now stepping over and becoming a terrific author. That's a great thing to see as these former Georgia Bulldogs going to do big things in life. We're always happy when that happens here around Dog Nation Daily. All right, something else that makes us very happy around here is the Gator Hater Updater, and I'm proud to say we are now at 849 days. That's how long it's been since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. That is good news. We do the Gator Hater Updater every single day here on Dog Nation Daily. I'll also say this to close out. I saw where our buddy D. Orlando Ledbetter from the AJC's got his mock draft out for the first round. He's got the Falcons taking DeAndre Baker. A lot of Georgia fans who say the Falcons haven't drafted enough UGA guys, that would maybe certainly change that mood just a bit. We'll see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily.